Amongst the chaos and barbarism in Tarkov, certain groups of individuals are quick to capitalize upon the death and destruction around them. And while their motives range from altruism to greed and personal gain, one thing they all share in common is that they maintain a stable connection to the outside world and that they are able to source food, water, weapons, and supplies for anyone who can pay. And sometimes, in exchange for getting their hands dirty. These are the stories of the shady men and women who keep Tarkov's machine of death well-oiled with the blood of both innocents and the guilty. These are the Dealers of Tarkov. As isolated and lonely as Tarkov may seem, one thing you've learned about the various big players in the region is just how well connected they are. Even some of the more unassuming dealers you perform jobs for, such as therapists, have business dealings and acquaintances in nearly every corner of the region. But some do prefer to work alone. Sergei Arsenyevich Samoylov is one of these people. He prefers to be referred to as simply Mechanic, and rather than surround himself with gangsters or foreign diplomats, the Mechanic is perfectly comfortable to spend the majority of his time in his small hideout within the chemical factory, surrounded by his tools and computers. But just because he is alone doesn't mean he is lonely. Mechanic keeps himself up to date on the latest news and happenings around Tarkov and the world via the internet and the numerous surveillance systems he has meticulously handcrafted. Mechanic's video and audio surveillance systems are fed directly into neural networks that include facial recognition, scanning each and every PMC and scav that ventures out into the open, and creating a database that can track their every movement. And it's no surprise that Mechanic has designed these systems and keeps to himself. His lone wolf tendencies and nearly agoraphobic lifestyle has an explanation. Mechanic absolutely detests modern society. And as your relationship with him grows, and you listen to his philosophical ramblings, you may learn a thing or two about Tarkov. And you may learn something about yourself. Tap, tap, tap. The steady rhythm of rain droplets are the metronome of nature, as big fat droplets fall from the brush above you and splash onto the barrel of your AK-74. You've been sitting in the mud, concealed by the bushes around you for 3, maybe 4 hours now. You're not really sure anymore. The misery of being cold and wet has faded somewhat, as fatigue and sleeplessness has crept its way into your consciousness. Your eyelids begin to become heavy as your mind wanders and recreations of the last week's events unfold in your head. Just a week ago, you were loading onto a helicopter with your unit, deploying from St. Petersburg to investigate some kind of incident in the Norvinsk Special Economic Zone. Everyone was there. Boris, Ivanovich, Dmitry, Mikhail. For some reason, you all thought you'd be fast roping into the Terror Group headquarters, maybe have some kind of legendary gun battle, then be picked up and be on your way back home within a day, maybe two tops. This job was going to pay so well, you were all going to retire, and live out the rest of your days just drinking and fishing. Hell, you'd all been in the military for so long before joining Bear that all of us were just ready to hang up our rifles and helmets and just be normal people for once. Then, your memories turned darker. In a bloody scene of Dmitry's head snapping back while on your first patrol, shot in the face, dead instantly. The next day, Mikhail sacrificed himself by diving on top of a grenade thrown by some USEC piece of shit. They're all gone now. It's only you. A friendly scav, and by friendly, you mean he didn't shoot you on sight, told you about a guy named Prapper, and now you're sitting here in the mud, trying to kill the locals that have gone mad, just to prove yourself to them. A sudden shot of adrenaline pulls you out of your waking nightmares as you finally spot movement near the shallow end of the river. A lone scav is attempting to make a crossing, but whatever he's managed to find in his backpack has him moving slow. This won't be too difficult, you think to yourself, and you gently place the stock of your Kalashnikov on your shoulder. Carefully aiming, you pull the trigger and take the shot. Fuck! You rip the charging handle to the rear and eject the dud round and seat a fresh one into the chamber. Again. Shit, my gun is fucked. You mutter, and rip the dust cover off to inspect the guts of your rifle. There it is. Your hammer spring is broken in one spot. You replace the dust cover and pull your Grak pistol. It's the only weapon you have left. You'll need to get this fixed, and soon, or you'll be seeing your squad mates sooner rather than later. Back at Prapper's makeshift shop, you show him your busted rifle and ask about parts. He doesn't have any he's willing to give you, and he sure as hell isn't going to give you a brand new rifle. But just as you're about to leave, he calls you back and tells you to head to the old chemical plant, and there you'll find a man known as Mechanic, who'll be able to fix your weapon. Finding Mechanic wasn't too difficult, and I guess you could say that he found you first. Luckily enough, you decided to visit the factory when things were relatively quiet. Just yesterday, you heard enough gunfire coming out of this place that you were expecting a bullet between the eyes as soon as you walked in the place. But today, it's eerily silent. While walking past some old service doors that looked locked and welded shut, a tinny electronic voice erupted from a small concealed speaker on the wall.
PMC, stop right there. Prapper had one of his message boys call ahead. Holster your weapon and stand where you are. I can help you, but I don't want any funny business, okay?
You notice the small red light emanating from a camera and realize he can see you. You nod, and the sound of about a dozen heavy locks clicking and clacking open comes from the rusted metal door in front of you. Standing in front of you is a man of average height and slender build, wearing a flannel button-up shirt stained with oil residue and singed in spots from small electrical arcs. He wears dark-rimmed spectacles and possesses a stern yet unthreatening face. He stands at the edge of darkness, but you can spot hundreds of small indicator lights blinking behind him, and hear the whirring of electronics and the clicking of servos behind him. He motions you in, and before he can turn on any lights, you immediately notice the change in temperature. It's a solid 15 degrees hotter in here than out on the factory floor. Fluorescent lights wink on, and you take in your surroundings. To your left is a simple but sturdy workbench, and a half-disassembled assault rifle that you don't recognize. It's definitely a newer model, and definitely Western in origin. Along the left wall are racks upon racks of firearms in various states of assembly and repair, and neatly organized bins of parts, pins, and springs. The majority of the room is dominated by server racks, computers, and fiber optic cables. They're all neatly bundled together, labeled, and color-coded. Along the far wall is what seems like some kind of command center, with multiple high-resolution computer monitors displaying full-color surveillance images in what appears to be dozens of different locations you don't recognize, with some of the cameras displaying small digital boxes framed around the faces of individuals carrying rifles, tracking their faces as they move. Two additional monitors have some kind of computer code displayed, and one is on a webpage you can't make out from this distance. Mechanic glances at you with an arched eyebrow, and calmly walks over to the computer displays, and turns them all off with a single press of a button.
I hear you have a broken rifle,
he says, turning back to you. You unsling your rifle and check that the safety is still engaged, then toss the rifle to Mechanic. Catching the rifle, Mechanic swiftly disengages the safety, and your heart skips a beat as you realize you've been double-crossed. Mechanic then racks the bolt and ejects the round in the chamber, catching it in his hand. Noticing that you've reached for your pistol, he gives you a knowing smile, and he inspects the cartridge primer.
Very light primer strike. The hammer isn't hitting with enough force. Probably your hammer spring. I have a million of them. No big deal. And yes, I am Mechanic. I have a lot of work to do, so after this is done, are you willing to help? It's a shame there's so little time and that the programmer unit for the PLC-100 is out of order. And all these orders to boot. Whatever, why am I telling you this? I need you to assemble an MP-133. I won't have time for it. And I'm missing some parts too. This gun should have more than 47 ergonomics, laser designator.
With a freshly repaired rifle back in your possession, you head back to your hideout, taking back roads and detours to avoid any trouble so that you have time to think. Who is this Mechanic guy? What are all those machines and computers? And he seems to take orders for specific guns from someone. You try to piece it together, but eventually abandon the idea and think of how you'll put this gun together for him. You arrive at the hideout, and after rummaging around through the spare junk you've managed to accumulate in the last few days, you're surprised to find that you can actually put together the gun the Mechanic wants. The MP-133 you found on a dead scav is rusted in spots, but it seems to work all right, and you hope that it will meet his expectations. Returning to mechanic's shop the next day, you see him hunched over some delicate-looking circuit boards with a soldering iron. He glances at the shotgun, then nods towards the other side of the room.
You got it? Leave it in the corner.
Then he kicks a cardboard box by his feet towards you and resumes his work. Looking inside, it contains a bundle of rubles and a Glock 17 with a 50-round ammo pack. The Glock appears to be brand new and still has the copper-colored anti-seizing compound on the slide rails. You're not sure where or when Mechanic got this, but you accept the payment. He finishes with whatever he was working on and moves over towards a computer monitor near you that is displaying some kind of graph, showing the rise and fall of something you don't understand.
You've not failed with the shotgun, so you may know your way around the tools. That didn't save me much time, though. All exchanges are on fire. Hope it won't start a panic. Nevertheless, the plan remains the same. I don't think it'll last long. Okay, I need you to work. And you, try to get hold of an AKS-70 for you. I need it with a B-11 handguard, 60-rounder, and compact. Make sure it's light. Yes, indexes have nothing to do with this. Hope you remembered everything. See you soon.
This guy shares a way of making conversation, you think to yourself. Indexes? Like the stock market? You aren't really sure what he was rambling about in between your instructions, but he seems to be paying pretty well for these builds, so you head out and begin looking for the parts he needs. Lucky for you, it didn't take long to source all the parts that fit Mechanic's description, and even though you almost resorted to taking an angle grinder to the handguard retainer cap, you got all the parts installed and brought it back to Mechanic's shop. Satisfied with your work, he hands you a big bundle of cash and produces a cigarette from his breast pocket and sticks it in his mouth, lighting it with a Zippo lighter before flicking it closed and speaking through smoke-filled lungs.
When I was a child, people used to say that it's not the destination that matters, but the journey itself.
He pauses, letting the words linger in the air like his cigarette smoke, before continuing.
But what if the destination is yourself? What do you know? How you use your reflexes? How many bullets are in your magazine? This feels particularly true when you're supposed to survive, clinging to this world with your teeth.
He trails off. While he was speaking, he wasn't looking at anything in particular, and now his gaze seems unfocused and distant, as if he's recalling something profound. He seems to snap out of it and looks you in the eye and says sharply,
I need an MP5, 50-round mag, silencer, tactical flashlight.
He pauses, then fixes you with a cool stare.
And decide for yourself what's more important to you, the journey or the destination.
You nod and leave the factory wondering what the meaning of his philosophical tone was. Is this some kind of metaphor or test? Is he going to ask me about this later? You have no idea, but you trudge off into the night to collect the parts he needs. Returning once again with a completed build, Mechanic simply mutters an acknowledgement of how the gun is quiet and effective, then hands you another bundle of cash. This time, it's euros. You stand there for a moment, expecting another order for a very specific gun, but this time, Mechanic sits there in his chair and eyes you up and down, like he's sizing you up and trying to decide if he wants to speak his mind or not. Eventually, he does speak and says,
Yesterday, someone was banging at the closed door in the kitchen. Sounds weird, right? I absolutely understand that this is impossible, but there's some sort of rational fear inside me, like a child when you're afraid of monsters under the bed. I think these fears grow stronger the farther away you are from civilization. When you're among others, as part of a society, even if you find a monster under the bed, you can tell someone about it. And when you're alone in the dark every day, doesn't work that way.
He pauses, grabs another cigarette, lights it. He's always smoking. After a moment of silence, he continues.
I'll tell you what it was the next time, since the irregularities don't stop there. For example, someone's jamming my signal, presumably from the shoreline territory. It's a hard trick to pull without powerful antennas. Try to look for satellite dishes. Most likely they use something that looks similar. There should be at least two, about 450 meters away from each other.
You just want me to find the antennas, you ask? He simply nods, and resumes sanding what appears to be a bedding job on a Remington 700 chassis. As it turns out, the journey to shoreline was more dangerous and time-consuming than the actual task mechanic gave you. The satellite dishes were easy to find, and although you didn't really understand the implications of doing this job, mechanic has been paying very well for relatively simple tasks. Returning to mechanic, you give him the coordinates of the antennas, and after muttering about why someone would want to do something or other, he smirks and looks up at you from his chair.
I promised to tell you about the monster.
You look at him, confused. For the first time, he cracks a smile and shows his large, perfectly straight but nicotine-stained teeth.
My story from the other day.
Remembering, you nod and he continues.
It was a failed controller. It flipped out and seemed as if someone was knocking at the door.
Jesus Christ, you think to yourself. This hermit might be spending a little too much time alone. He continues.
That's how we create fears for ourselves. Interestingly, if I didn't go and check what it was, it would be turned off in 15 minutes by the shutdown relay. After that, it would be extremely difficult to determine the source of the night sound. That's how all those stories from the newspapers are born, I assume.
He coughs, swallows, then pauses for a moment before continuing.
I can bypass the signal jammers by reconfiguring their frequency without arousing suspicion of their owner, as if things are still the same as they were. I need a bit of electronics for this. I think you can help me. The materials must be found silently so no one would know what we're working on.
He reaches into his breast pocket, and instead of producing a cigarette, he withdraws a small piece of paper, folds it up into a small square between his index and middle finger, and holds it out to you. You reach for it, and notice his thumb is sticking out, kind of like a finger gun. You pause for the briefest of seconds before grabbing the paper and unfolding it to reveal a list of computer parts. You quickly calculate the quickest routes to the Ultra shopping mall in your head, knowing there will probably be some of these PC parts laying around there. Walking through the woods by yourself, you wonder if the finger gun gesture was intentional or just a coincidence. As your mind wanders, you start to ponder the almost comical metaphorical nature of it before catching yourself. Oh God, I must be spending too much time around that guy with all those philosophical monologues. Now here I am, trudging through the woods. The philosopher of Tarkov. After some time carefully navigating the outskirts of the customs area, you stand on the overpass that offers a good view of the Ultra shopping mall. You never visited Tarkov before its descent into madness, but you vaguely remember seeing advertisements for this place on the television. The overcast skies, broken windows, and derelict vehicles in the parking lot is a far cry from the colorful and sunny advertisements that came with a cheerful jingle, politely asking you if you'd like to stop by for a fun day of shopping with the family. There's most likely some electronic stores in there, and if that fails, there's probably plenty of computers and various offices around the place that might not be completely ransacked by now. You cautiously make your way inside. Turns out that your intuition was correct, and while avoiding some loud and very drunk scavs sitting around a burn barrel, you quickly found a back office in an old furniture store that had just what you needed. You return the items to Mechanic, who mumbles an acknowledgement for your efforts while tossing you a bundle of cash, then head out. The following day, you return to Mechanic. On the way there, you realize that of all the scum in Tarkov willing to give you work, you find his company the most welcoming. He isn't trying to actively kill you by sending you out into combat on a daily basis, and his philosophical nature at times can be endearing. You wonder that maybe when all this is over, maybe you and he could go get a drink someday. That same line of thought trails off as you think of the odds of you ever actually escaping. How many bodies have you seen in your short time here? How many of those bodies were because you pulled the trigger? Nobody really lasts long here. What makes you think that you'll actually make it out? The thought is interrupted by the realization that you're standing in front of a mechanic's shop. The door is open, and he is standing in front of you. He motions you in. Mechanic studies you for a moment, then says,
"Someday, we will get rid of the invisible hand, which used to brand us with employee badges and now cause this mess."
He flips through a few papers in his hands that have all kinds of writing and something that looks like a map or a layout of an area. He continues,
"And I think it will lead us to a great war. At least, all current events look like preconditions to it."
He glances up at you,
sees the confused but interested look on your face, decides to get straight to the point. I worked here, at the chemical plant, as an ordinary foreman. There it is. You're finally starting to understand who this man is, he continues. It was a good time. Everyone thought so, including me. He pauses for a second with the faintest hint of a smile on his face before turning grim. Now it's full of scavs, and swarming with brigands and outlaws. I want to make use of the factory premises. I need you to find out which exits can still be used.
Finally finding the schematic he was searching for, he tosses over what looks like to be a map of the factory, with the three doors circled in red. You nod, pick up your rifle, and head out the door. Mechanic Shop is one of the most easily accessible, but yet hidden areas in the factory. You can visit him with relative ease, but actually exploring deeper into the factory itself is not for the faint of heart. Recently, Bear operatives have been closing in on whatever remaining USEC that are positioned here, as the most recent intelligence indicates that there may be an access point to a secret Terra Group laboratory somewhere inside the factory. In addition to that, like Mechanic indicated, the place seems to be teeming with armed locals that will shoot any PMC on site. You can't simply walk around the place and go sightseeing, but you feel confident you can get this job done in a timely manner. The main entrance and exit is easy. That's where you'll start. Gate 3, by the looks of it, on the map the mechanic provided you. Checking it off your list, you carefully poke your head out and observe the main factory floor. The place is dark, and you can hear shuffling and murmuring of scavs as they attempt to overturn some piece of equipment at the edge of the light's reach, far off to your right. Looking at your map, you need to head straight and left down a tight corridor to the next exit. Shouldering your AK at a low ready, you carefully and quietly head towards the hallway in front of you. After not even 4 steps forward, you step on a flat piece of sheet metal that almost causes you to lose your balance, and in the process, the piece of metal is flung out from your foot and loudly crashes into a large piece of machinery. Looking to your right, you spot the heads of scavs snap over to your direction and shout in alarm, dropping whatever they were trying to overturn and grabbing shotguns and pistols from their backs and waistbands. The quickest one to bear arms with a pistol lets off a flurry of shots in your direction that go whizzing above your head. Reacting as you've been trained, you let off a burst of 5 rounds in automatic fire to suppress them as you dash towards the corridor in front of you. You hear footfalls approaching from behind as 3 scavs are in hot pursuit. The corridor is extremely dark, with a single red blinking light serving as the only illumination in the area. There is almost no cover, and you decide to try to beat them to the other end. Halfway down the hallway, your heart sinks as you hear them enter the hallway behind you, shooting wildly. Glass panes to your right explode as bullets meant for you shatter them with their impact. You're almost to the end of the hallway when a searing white-hot pain erupts from your right forearm. You glance down to see gouts of blood spurting from a gaping wound just above your elbow.
Fuck! Not like this!
You mutter to yourself, attempting to bring your rifle up to fire, but your fingers no longer respond to your commands. Transitioning your rifle to your other shoulder, you empty your magazine down the hallway. The thunderous report of your rifle reverberating off the walls of the corridor, and the screams of the scavs on the other end fueling your bloodlust and giving you the fuel you needed to stay in the fight. You slide around the corner and kick the magazine release and the empty mag out with it, and seat a fresh magazine. The corridor is now silent. Pain and the feeling of wetness reminds you of your wound, and you tear open your IFAC mounted to your plate carrier, spilling its contents on the floor and finding the cat tourniquet. Wrapping it just above the elbow, you crank the windlass unbearably tight until the spurting blood turns into a tiny trickle. Your heart drops into your stomach as you now hear more voices at the end of the corridor, attracted by all the commotion. But it's not scavs. It's English. Your blood turns to ice as you realize that a squad of USEC has come to investigate. Rage consumes every part of your being as you realize that this is how your story will end. You'll be some bloodied and bullet-riddled corpse left to rot on some dying factory in the middle of nowhere. Shouts and automatic gunfire erupt from the end of the hall, but not in your direction. Cautiously peeking around the corner, you see muzzle flashes as the USEC have turned their attention to something else. They're shouting wildly and firing in a panic, and you can hear one.
How the fuck does he move so fast?
You hear something huge impact soft flesh, and you could swear that even at this distance, you can hear the wind being completely knocked out of someone.
I'm empty! Reloading! Reload!
A loud and wet, grotesque smack reverberates off the walls of the corridor. You retreat even further, only peeking enough so that one eyeball can witness whatever the hell is going on at the end of the hallway. A figure straight out of a nightmare turns the corner and begins to walk in your direction. It's a man, you think. Slim, but covered head to toe in corded, sweating, and tattooed muscle. His arms are flecked with gore, and he drags a massive sledgehammer on the ground behind him. And his face is hidden by what looks like a welding mask. Barely able to restrain a gasp, you've seen enough, and quietly retreat to an access stairwell that leads to an underground service tunnel. With the adrenaline of combat fading, and slowly being replaced by the terror of being discovered by the sledgehammer-wielding abomination, the pain in your arm begins to amplify, and you nearly let out a whimper the moment you hear the heavy hammer come to a rest on the concrete floor above you. You stay absolutely silent as you hear the labored breathing above you, muffled by the mask he wears. After what seems like an eternity, you hear the scrape of the hammer being hoisted up once again, and the masked madman slowly walks off, headed to another part of the factory. Long after the sound of the footsteps were no longer audible, you let out a shuddering sigh of relief and realize that you've been holding your breath for some time. Gasping in air, you're relieved to find that the hiding place you chose just so happened to be another exit out of the factory. This one marked Cellars. You quickly check the lock on the door and find that it's in working condition and not blocked, then slowly make your way towards Gate Zero, the final exit. Some days later, after a rough and extremely painful surgery performed by the therapist, you're ready to head out again. You stop by Mechanic's shop to tell him the news that all exits are good to go. You give Mechanic back his map, stained with your blood now, and he glances at your bandaged arm.
Good old factory sure has changed, he remarks, then takes a long drag off his cigarette.
He turns around, rummaging through a box behind him. Part of you wishes that he cared more about your injury, but crying over spilled blood in Tarkov is just how things are done around here. He turns around with a wad of cash in one hand and a pretty high-end computer part in the other. You vaguely remember one of your younger cousins showing you one of these a long time ago. It's a graphics card, like for computer games. But what the hell are you gonna do with this? Mechanic sees your confusion and frustration, and after letting out a large plume of smoke, begins to speak.
The other day, someone has decided to crash the market by unloading a thick wad of bitcoins. So thick that Targo X started accepting bids 10 times cheaper than the market value.
He paces towards his rack of computer and server hardware.
Bids queue kept going while being constantly replenished with cheaper bids. I managed to buy a couple hundred by chance, and today the price is back to normal as if nothing had ever happened.
He looks at you seriously.
We need to get into that action while the market is being controlled like this.
Still confused, you have many questions about what the hell all this means. Mechanic sits you down and explains to you that all of the computer gadgetry around him is the beginnings of a Bitcoin farm, and that those farms can generate a form of free currency that is largely unregulated, and that if you help him, he can provide the knowledge and some parts so that you can start a Bitcoin farm of yourself. Not only that, but if you can find items of interest for him, he can also supply you with raw Bitcoin, knowing that even within Tarkov, where you seem so far away from any semblance of normal society, money can still buy you almost anything. And the more of it you have, the better chances of your survival and eventual escape. So you agree. Over time, you aid Mechanic in fixing up the factory so that he has adequate power and cooling for his farm. On one occasion, you had to traverse a rather hostile area of the customs zone to retrieve a large package of graphics cards that were seized when violence erupted. Each time you fulfilled one of his requests, he typically paid you in Bitcoin or provided some kind of other helpful aid. And as promised, eventually, you got a small Bitcoin farm of your own operating out of your hideout. Mechanic always was reclusive, but as you continued to help him build up his various computer networks, he stopped leaving his workshop and refused to meet with anyone besides you. On one occasion, he even requested that you begin bringing him his beloved cigarettes. And on one trip to drop off electronics, food, and water for him, he stopped you before leaving and said,
I have two neural networks, you know.
Pausing for a moment to allow you to consider what he meant.
One recognizes the faces in the cameras that I have installed around Tarkov and scans them against the databases. The other monitors the cryptocurrency trading and reacts to it.
You notice for the first time that he almost never looks at you in the eye when talking anymore.
Today, I decided to create one more. It will monitor the temperature, humidity, pressure, and other parameters of my hideout, amongst other things, and respond to my mood.
You consider this for a minute. Neural networks are supposed to be some kind of self-learning AI system, but it sounds like he's trying to make some kind of a digital companion.
I called her Lucia. The neural network, I mean. So when I keep silent, it does well and even reminds me to get some sleep when necessary. But as soon as I start talking to myself, it attempts to distract me, putting on music or something like that.
You listen silently, intrigued by this new side of mechanic that he's never revealed before. He continues.
However, I trained her with phrases from movies. At the time, it seemed like this was appropriate, but not for me. I'll have to think about what stimuli are the best to mimic real people, rather than society and its stereotypes.
For the first time, Mechanic looks forlorn and his eyes look weary. He trails off. You're not sure what to say or do, but before you leave, he gives you another gun build order. And this time, before leaving, you rest a hand on his shoulder and give him a slight smile. He seems momentarily taken aback by the gesture at first, but returns a grin, and you once again part ways. During this time, you also continued to help Mechanic build his custom order guns. Each time you visited, Mechanic would typically begin with a philosophical monologue of some kind that over time, you came to expect and enjoy. His cynical but thoughtful outlook on the world and societies of modern nations were like an oasis of sanity in a part of the world that had devolved so much. The more time you spent around him, the more thoughtful you became yourself. And one night, laying in your hideout, you began to wonder. You've spent so much time here and done so much killing. Each one of those scavs or PMCs that you've had to drop may have at one point have been a family man or a good guy. They had dreams, aspirations, and goals. You feel confident that you'll eventually leave this place, but like Mechanic pointed out so many times, and even though you may leave this place and go off and try to be normal somewhere, anywhere in the world, after all that has happened here and after all of the death and destruction you have caused, you may be able to leave, but will you ever truly escape from Tarkov? I hope you all enjoyed this episode of Dealers of Tarkov. This one was definitely a doozy. I wanted to incorporate more narrative and storytelling elements into this episode than I ever have before, to see how you would all react to something like this. What Mechanic lacks in quests that move the story of Tarkov, he makes up for in his unique dialogue. I couldn't include all of it in this video, or it would be four times longer than it already is, but I urge everyone to go into the Escape from Tarkov wiki and check out all of Mechanic's quests and read the dialogue, especially the gunsmith ones. Mechanic is extremely philosophical in his words and thoughts, and if you take the time to read them all, it's actually quite interesting. In this video, I wanted to break apart the dialogue to make it flow and make more sense rather than simply read you the text verbatim. When you dissect it in this way, it comes off as more conversational, and I think you'll get a lot more out of it. Maybe someday the Tarkov quest will be voice acted, as I think a lot more people would get more into the lore if it were. I did leave out quite a few things because they either weren't very narrative or they were strictly gameplay-related quests that didn't move the story forward. Signal is kind of interesting, but it ends on a dead end, and almost all of Mechanic's later quests are just combat and fetch missions to provide endgame content. I also left out the Sanitar connection, as that's already been covered several times in other videos, so if you haven't seen the Therapist or Peacekeeper videos, go check those out. These videos take a tremendous amount of effort to produce, as just writing this script took me weeks, let alone the hours my editor has to put in to get the voiceover perfect and then put in video that correlates to the story. As you can tell, we had a ton of custom artwork made for this particular video. I have future plans for that I will cover in another video, but in all, I love doing these videos, and we have plenty of other dealers to cover next. So keep an eye out for those, but until then, I'm Jeff with UL Gaming. Good luck out there.